A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been engraving HDPE storage boxes again, and he's got a whole system worked out. 15-centimeter lettering, filled with an oil-based paint marker, for the boxes that live outside on his patio. He wants markings that survive the elements, which is fair, because the boxes themselves are built to survive the elements. The question is whether the mark does.
HDPE is the right material to be thinking about here. It's what outdoor signage and marine board are made from. Chemical resistance, low moisture absorption, high impact toughness. The stuff is practically indestructible, which is exactly why it's a nightmare to mark well.
Practically indestructible, until you put a spinning carbide cutter to it, and it melts into a little waxy puddle.
That's the thing people don't expect. HDPE softens somewhere around 120 to 135 Celsius. A dull bit or a cutter that dwells in one spot, and the friction pushes the material into that melt zone almost instantly. You get gumming, smeared edges, chips that re-weld themselves to the surface.
So the engraving itself is a heat management problem, not a cutting problem.
The rule is, make chips, don't rub. If you're seeing dust or fuzz, you're not cutting, you're just generating heat. Keep the tool moving, use a high chip load, and get the chips out of there with an air blast or something. HDPE doesn't conduct heat away like metal does. It just holds it.
Which is why the stencil question matters more than people think. Daniel's using a Dremel, which means a handheld rotary tool. You're not setting up a CNC with controlled feed rates. You're guiding this thing by hand, and you're going to overrun the edges of your stencil. That's not a failure of technique. It's just what happens when a human wrist meets a spinning bit.
And if the stencil is plastic, every overrun takes a chunk out of it. Mylar, acetate, polycarbonate, they're all designed for paint or light routing. Acetate is brittle and solvent, sensitive. Thin mylar tears on curves. You run a carbide cutter into the edge of a plastic stencil a few times, and you've got a stencil with no clean edges left.
Functionally useless. Daniel said it himself. So metal is the only option that survives the workflow. Which brings us to his actual question. Brass or stainless steel? Does either make more sense for a certain type of engraving and a certain type of carbide?
So here's the part where I have to be honest about what's established and what's inference. The durability tables for stencils are based on paint and routing use. Brass is rated for 1,000 plus uses, stainless for 1,500 plus. But nobody has published a study on how many carbide overruns a metal stencil survives before the edges degrade.
So we're working from material properties, not from a spec sheet.
Right. And the material properties are pretty clear. Brass is a copper-zinc alloy. It's malleable, ductile, sits around 65 on the Rockwell B scale. It's what most interlocking stencil sets are actually made from, because you can cut fine Gothic characters into it without cracking.
And stainless?
Stainless is around 80 Rockwell B. It's harder, more rigid, corrosion-resistant, and it'll withstand 1200 degrees Fahrenheit without flinching. It's the gold standard for durability, but that hardness has a cost. It's heavier, more expensive, and it's harder on your tooling.
So if I'm running a standard carbide engraving cutter, the brass is gentler on the bit. The stainless is going to dull the carbide faster.
That's the trade. Carbide tip bits are the standard for metal engraving, and they'll handle brass beautifully. But if you're going to run a stainless stencil with a Dremel, you're better off with diamond cut tooling, because the stainless is hard enough to chew through a standard carbide bit over time.
And Daniel's doing HDPE boxes on a patio. Not one box. An inventory system. Repetitive work.
Which changes the calculus. If this were a one-off art project, I'd say get brass. It's cheaper, it's easier on your bits, and you'll never wear it out. But he's marking outdoor storage boxes in a humid environment. Jerusalem gets rain in the winter. Brass tarnishes. It's susceptible to corrosion in humid conditions. Stainless doesn't care.
So the outdoor element pushes towards stainless, but the carbide question pushes toward brass.
That's the tension. And here's the thing about the oil-based paint marker that Daniel's using. The ink is waterproof and UV resistant, cures in about 10 minutes, lasts 5+ years outdoors, but on HDPE, it's sitting on the surface. HDPE has low surface energy. Nothing soaks in.
Which means the paint would wipe right off with alcohol if it were just sitting on the flat surface of the box.
Right. The durability of this marking system doesn't come from the paint. It comes from the groove. He's engraved a deep, wide pocket into the plastic, and the paint is sitting in that pocket, protected from abrasion. The engraving is doing the weatherproofing work.
That's the counterintuitive part. People think the paint is what makes it durable. The paint is just the contrast. The depth is what keeps it there.
And 15 centimeters is a lot of depth and width. That's a serious groove. Standard industrial stencil sets top out around 4 inches, which is about 10 centimeters. 15 centimeters is custom territory.
Which is where the interlocking stencils come in. Daniel mentioned them, and he's right that they solve the alignment problem. But I want to talk about why alignment matters in a warehouse setting, because it's not just aesthetics.
It's legibility at distance. If you've got a rack of boxes and each one has a slightly different baseline or the spacing between characters wanders, your eye has to work to parse each label. Multiply that across 50 boxes and you've got a system that looks improvised.
And the whole point of an inventory system is that it's a system, not 40 individual artistic expressions.
Interlocking stencils move the spacing decision out of the human hand and into the hardware. Each character plate has mating tabs or edges that lock together. The spacing is set by the tool, not by your eye. Every box comes out identical.
And that's the professional look Daniel's after. It's not about having nicer lettering. It's about the rack of boxes reading as a coherent unit.
The standard sets are brass, and C.H. Hansen is the dominant brand. A 45-piece set with letters, numbers, spacers, periods, commas, and dashes. You can get them in 2, 3, or 4-inch heights. Seaton sells the 4-inch set for about $150.
But Daniel needs 15-centimeter characters. That's 6 inches. He's outside the standard range.
Margreiter Technic makes interlocking stencils up to 203 millimeters, which is 8 inches. So the large format stuff exists, but it's not the cheap off-the-shelf option. He's either paying for a custom set or he's finding a specialty supplier.
And if he's paying for custom, the brass versus stainless question gets more expensive either way.
Stainless is the more expensive material to start with. Custom stainless in a large format, that's a real investment. But it's also a one-time investment. Stencils don't wear out in this application. He's engraving HDPE, not steel plate. The plastic is the soft thing here.
Which makes me wonder if the brass corrosion issue is overstated for his use case. He's not leaving the stencils outside. He's using them in a workshop and then putting them away. The boxes live outside. The stencils don't.
That's a fair point. If the stencils are stored indoors, the humidity argument against brass weakens considerably. You'd get some tarnishing over years, but tarnish doesn't affect function. It's cosmetic.
So, for a home or small business inventory system, brass interlocking stencils, stored indoors, used with a standard carbide bit, is probably the sweet spot.
I think so. The brass is easier on the tooling. It's what the interlocking sets are actually made in, and the corrosion concern is minimal if you're not leaving it in a damp shed. Stainless is the pick if you're doing this in a marine environment or if the stencils themselves are going to live outside.
Or if you're running a commercial operation where the stencils are getting banged around constantly and you need them to survive being dropped on concrete.
Right. The stainless will shrug off abuse that would dent brass. Brass is soft enough that a good drop onto a hard floor can deform an edge.
And a deformed edge on a stencil means a deformed character on every subsequent box.
The failure compounds. That's the thing about stencils. They're a master template. Any defect in the template gets reproduced forever.
Which is also the argument for buying quality stencils in the first place. If you're going to build a repetitive marking system, the consistency of the output is only as good as the consistency of the input.
And the input, here's a handheld Dremel. That's the variable that worries me. Even with a metal stencil, the human hand is the weak point.
Daniel mentioned the overrun problem. The bit catches the edge of the stencil and chips it. With plastic, that's fatal. With brass, it's a minor event. With stainless, it's a non-event until the bit itself gives up.
So there's a real argument that the stencil material should be matched to the operator's skill level. If you're still learning the hand feel, brass is forgiving enough to absorb mistakes without destroying your tooling. Stainless will punish your bits for every slip.
And if you're experienced, stainless rewards you with a stencil that never changes shape.
The carbide question Daniel asked is really about this. Standard carbide engraving cutters are tungsten carbide. They're hard, but they're brittle. Running them against stainless steel, which is also hard, creates a situation where both materials are fighting each other.
And the carbide loses that fight over time.
It microchips. The edge degrades. You get a duller cut, which means more friction, which means more heat, which brings us right back to the HDPE melting problem.
So the stencil choice cascades into the bit choice, which cascades into the heat management, which cascades into the quality of the final mark.
Everything's connected. That's what I like about this prompt. It looks like a simple question about brass versus stainless, but it's actually a systems question.
Let's talk about the paint for a second, because Daniel's using an oil-based paint marker, and I want to make sure the groove is deep enough to actually protect it.
Oil-based markers cure by cross-linking into a flexible polymer film. The pigment is insoluble, which is why it doesn't fade like a dye. On a porous surface, it soaks in and becomes permanent. On HDPE, it sits on top.
And sitting on top means it's vulnerable to abrasion. If the lettering is proud of the surface, anything that scrapes across the box takes the paint with it.
But if the lettering is recessed, the paint sits below the surface plane. A scrape across the box doesn't touch it. The walls of the groove protect it.
So the depth of the engraving is doing double duty. It's creating contrast through shadow, and it's creating a protective pocket for the paint.
And 15cm lettering means the groove is wide enough that he can get the paint marker down into it cleanly. Try filling a 2cm character with a paint marker and you're fighting the tip width the whole time.
The big lettering also solves the legibility problem at distance. If these boxes are on a patio and he's trying to identify them from across the yard, 6-inch characters are readable from a long way off.
Standard industrial stencils in the 2-4 inch range are designed for marking crates and pallets that get read from a few feet away. Daniel's working at a different scale.
And the oil-based marker is the right choice for outdoor UV exposure. It's rated for 5+ years in direct sun. But here's the caveat. If the ink is sitting in a shallow groove, or if it's not fully cured, alcohol or acetone will dissolve it.
Which matters if he's ever cleaning the boxes. HDPE is chemical resistant, so people clean it with solvents. If the marking is just paint on the surface, a wipe with mineral spirits takes the label off.
But if the paint is down in a deep groove, the solvent has to actually get down there and sit. A quick wipe across the surface won't do it.
The geometry protects it. That's the whole system working together.
Let's get back to the interlocking stencils, because I think there's a detail Daniel's missing about how they actually work in practice.
The mating tabs.
The mating tabs. They lock the characters together horizontally, which sets the spacing. But they also set the baseline, because all the characters in a set are the same height, and the tabs are positioned at the same height on each plate.
So when you lock them together, the bottoms all line up automatically. You don't have to eyeball whether the A is sitting lower than the B.
And that's the thing that makes a rack of boxes look professional. It's not that each individual letter is perfectly formed, it's that they're all in the same relationship to each other, every time.
The human variable is removed. You can't drift. The hardware won't let you.
Now, for a one-off label, that doesn't matter. You can hand letter it, and it'll look fine. But Daniel's talking about an inventory system. Repetitive. Dozens of boxes.
And the repetition is where the errors compound. If you're hand spacing characters and you're off by a millimeter on box 1, you're off by a different millimeter on box 2. By box 20, the whole system looks chaotic.
Interlocking stencils are a jig. They're a fixture. They turn a freehand operation into a repeatable manufacturing process.
And that's worth the money. $150 for a brass set that lasts essentially forever, in a home or light commercial setting, that's trivial compared to the time saved.
The time saved and the rework avoided. Because if you hand letter a box and it comes out crooked, you're either living with it or you're sanding it off and starting over.
And you can't really sand HDPE without changing the surface finish. It's not like wood where you can blend it back.
So the stencil is insurance against rework. That's the economic argument.
Let me raise one more thing about the brass versus stainless question that I don't think gets enough attention. The thermal conductivity.
Go on.
Brass conducts heat much better than stainless steel. When the carbide bit overruns the stencil edge, the friction generates heat at the contact point. Brass pulls that heat away from the edge and dissipates it. Stainless holds it.
So the brass stencil is actually helping manage the heat problem at the point of contact.
It's a small effect, but in a system where heat is the enemy, every bit of dissipation helps. Stainless is a worse thermal conductor, so the heat stays localized at the edge.
Which means the stainless edge gets hotter, which means the HDPE right next to it's more likely to melt.
The stencil is sitting right on top of the plastic. If the stencil edge is hot, it's transferring that heat into the HDPE right at the character boundary.
And that's where you get the smeared glossy edges that ruin the look of the engraving.
So brass has another point in its favor for this specific application. Better thermal behavior at the contact point.
But stainless still wins on longevity and corrosion resistance.
It's a genuine trade-off. There's no single right answer. It depends on whether you're optimizing for the tooling, the thermal behavior, and the fine detail, or for the stencil's own durability and weather resistance.
For Daniel's patio boxes in Jerusalem, I think brass is the call. The stencils live indoors, the HDPE is soft, and the thermal behavior matters.
I'd agree, with one caveat. If he ever plans to expand this to a commercial operation, or if the stencils are going to be shared among multiple people who might be rougher on them, stainless becomes more attractive.
And if he's using diamond-cut bits anyway, the stainless doesn't punish the tooling as much.
Right. The bit and the stencil have to be considered together. Brass with standard carbide. Stainless with diamond cut. Mixing them wrong is where you get premature wear.
What about the plastic interlocking stencils? Daniel mentioned metal as the popular option, but plastic interlocking sets do exist.
They do. C.H. Hansen makes a plastic interlocking variant in 3-inch. And for paint applications, plastic is fine. The stencil never sees a cutting tool.
But for Dremel engraving, the plastic is a consumable. You're gonna chip it.
And the interlocking tabs on plastic are the weak point. A metal stencil with interlocking tabs, the tabs are as durable as the character plate. On plastic, the tabs are thin little projections that snap off.
So, a plastic interlocking stencil set for rotary engraving is a false economy. You replace it constantly.
The metal stencil is the buy once option. That's why the industrial standard is brass.
Let's talk about the actual technique for a second, because I think there's a detail about running a Dremel against a metal stencil that people get wrong.
The depth control?
The depth control. With a handheld rotary tool, you're not setting a cut depth. You're guiding the bit by feel, and the stencil is your depth reference.
The bit should ride along the inside edge of the stencil, using the stencil wall as a guide. That's what keeps the character edges crisp.
And that's also what causes the overrun damage. When you're following the stencil edge and your hand drifts, the bit climbs up onto the stencil itself.
That's the moment where the stencil material matters. Plastic chips. Brass deforms slightly. Stainless doesn't care.
And the operator feels the difference. When the bit hits brass, there's a little resistance, a little feedback. When it hits stainless, it's a hard stop.
Which is actually useful feedback. You know immediately that you've left the cut zone.
With plastic, there's no feedback. The bit just goes through it.
The metal stencil is also a tactile guide. It tells you where you are.
That's the thing about this workflow. It's not just about durability, it's about the whole feel of the operation.
The feel is what determines whether you can do this for 2 hours straight without making mistakes.
Which brings us back to the repetitive nature of the work. Daniel's not engraving one box, he's engraving a whole inventory. Fatigue is a real factor.
Fatigue is where the overruns happen. The first 5 boxes are perfect. The next 5 have a few slips. By box 15, your hand is tired and the stencil is taking damage.
The stencil choice is also about how forgiving the system is when you're tired.
Brass is more forgiving. It absorbs the mistake. Stainless transfers the mistake to your bit.
Which is more expensive to replace, a brass stencil or a set of carbide bits?
The bits. A good carbide engraving cutter is maybe $10 to $20. A set of them adds up fast. The brass stencil is a one-time purchase.
The economic logic favors brass even more strongly when you factor in tool wear.
Unless you're going to be doing this for years at high volume, in which case the stainless stencil's longevity starts to pay off against the ongoing cost of diamond bits.
But Daniel's marking HDPE boxes for a home inventory. The plastic is soft. The volume is low. The stencils live indoors.
Brass. Final answer, with the caveat that stainless is the right call for a marine or high humidity commercial environment.
The interlocking design is worth the premium over individual loose characters.
The alignment is the whole point. Loose characters drift. Interlocking characters can't.
I want to circle back to something about the HDPE itself, because I think there's a misconception about engraving plastic that's worth addressing.
That it's all the same?
That plastic is plastic. HDPE is a semi-crystalline thermoplastic. It melts in a narrow window. But other plastics behave completely differently.
Acrylic, for example, engraves beautifully with a rotary tool. It chips cleanly, doesn't melt, and the edges come out frosted. HDPE is the opposite. It's waxy and it wants to gum up.
The technique that works on acrylic doesn't transfer to HDPE. You have to adjust your speed, your feed rate, your bit choice.
Your expectations. HDPE is never going to give you that crisp, machined look that acrylic does. It's a softer, more forgiving material.
But it's also the right material for outdoor storage boxes. Acrylic would shatter in the cold and degrade in the sun.
HDPE is the workhorse. It's what they make cutting boards and marine board and playground equipment from. It's designed to take abuse.
The marking system has to match the material's strengths and weaknesses. The oil-based paint marker is the right ink for outdoor UV. The deep groove is the right geometry for low surface energy. The metal stencil is the right template for a handheld rotary tool.
It's a coherent system. Every part of it's doing a job.
Daniel's recipe is sound. The only thing I'd add is a clear polyurethane sealer over the paint if he wants to push the outdoor life past 5 years.
The sealer adds a protective film over the ink. On HDPE, where the ink is sitting on the surface, that's extra insurance against abrasion and UV.
But it's optional. The groove is already doing most of the protection.
The groove is the thing people underestimate. They think the paint is the durability. The paint is just a color. The depth is the durability.
Which is a nice way to put it. The engraving is the weatherproofing. The paint is the legibility.
The stencil is the consistency. Every part of the system has a role.
Let's hit the alignment question one more time, because I think there's a psychological element Daniel's getting at when he says misalignment is an impediment to a repetitive workflow.
The psychological element being that you stop trusting your own output?
If you hand-letter 10 boxes and they all come out slightly different, you start second-guessing yourself. You slow down. You hesitate. And hesitation with a Dremel is the enemy.
Hesitation means the bit dwells, the HDPE melts, and you get a bad cut. The interlocking stencil removes the hesitation because you're not making decisions anymore. You're just following the template.
The decisions were made once when you bought the stencil set. After that, it's execution.
Execution is where consistency lives. That's the whole point of jigs and fixtures in manufacturing. You take the thinking out of the repetitive task.
The interlocking stencil is a thinking removal device. That's the value.
The professional look is a side effect of the consistency. It's not that the letters are prettier. It's that they're identical.
Which is what makes a warehouse look like a warehouse instead of a garage.
15 centimeters is 6 inches. 6.
Fair enough. I was rounding.
I used to cut stencils for a trophy shop in the early 90s. We had a set of brass interlocking letters, 2-inch Gothic, and a little pantograph engraver. The stencils were for the big stuff, the plaques that wouldn't fit in the pantograph. You'd clamp the stencil to the brass plate and run a hand engraver around the inside edge.
Same principle as the Dremel, just a different tool.
The brass stencils would last about a year of daily use before the edges got soft. The corners would round over and the letters would start to look fuzzy. Stainless would have held up better, but the boss wouldn't pay for stainless. Said brass was traditional.
He was right, in the sense that brass is what the industry standard was, but the softness is real.
We'd sharpen them with a file sometimes. Just touch up the edges. You can't do that with stainless, not with a hand file. But you also don't need to.
The brass required maintenance, but the maintenance was possible.
The thing about the interlocking tabs, the little ones on the ends, they'd wear out first. The tabs would get loose, and the letters wouldn't lock together tight anymore. Then you'd get gaps between characters, and the whole word would look like it was falling apart.
That's a failure mode I hadn't considered. The tabs wearing before the characters.
The tabs are the thin part. They take the same abuse, but they got less material. On brass, they'd bend. On stainless, they'd probably be fine forever.
For interlocking sets specifically, the tab durability pushes towards stainless, even if the character edges don't demand it.
If you're clamping the stencil down and running a tool against it, the tabs are the weak point. That's where the money goes in the long run.
That's a useful detail. The interlocking feature is the point of the set and is the first thing to fail on brass.
We'd wire the letters together with copper thread when the tabs got too loose. Worked okay for a while. Then you'd get a letter slipping and the whole word would be crooked and you'd have to start the plaque over.
The alignment problem coming back through mechanical failure.
The stencil doesn't solve alignment forever. It solves it until the stencil wears out, and the tabs wear out before the letters do.
For a high-volume operation, stainless interlocking stencils are actually the better economic choice, even though they cost more up front. The tabs survive.
The boss never learned that. We bought 3 brass sets in the time I was there. Would have been cheaper to buy 1 stainless set and be done with it.
But for Daniel's volume, 1 brass set will probably last the rest of his life.
Probably. He's not running a trophy shop.
The takeaway is that the tab is the thing to inspect when you're buying a used interlocking set. If the tabs are worn, the set is done, no matter how good the characters look.
Don't buy the plastic ones. The tabs snap off the first time you look at them wrong.
The plastic interlocking sets are a trap.
They're for paint. They were never meant for a cutting tool, but people see the lower price and think they're saving money.
Then they're buying a new set every month.
The trophy shop had a plastic set for paint stenciling. It was fine for that, but the minute someone tried to run the hand engraver against it, that was the end of it.
The material choice is really about the tool. Paint gets plastic. Rotary cutting gets metal.
The metal choice is about how much you care about the tabs.
That's a good way to frame it. The tabs are the hidden variable.
I keep thinking about the paint sitting in the groove. The oil-based marker cures into a flexible film, but on HDPE, it's not bonded to the surface. It's just sitting there.
That's fine, as long as nothing gets down into the groove to dissolve it. The groove is the armor.
But what about thermal cycling? The HDPE expands and contracts with temperature. The paint film doesn't.
That's a real concern. HDPE expands about 10 times as much as steel. A 48-inch panel can grow a third of an inch over a 70-degree temperature swing.
The groove is changing size, and the paint is trying to stay the same size.
The paint is flexible enough to handle it. That's the point of the oil-based formulation. It cross-links into a flexible polymer, not a brittle one.
But over years of cycling, the paint could crack or delaminate from the walls of the groove.
That's where the sealer helps. A clear polyurethane over the top gives the paint a second skin that moves with it.
The depth of the groove means that even if the paint does crack, the pieces are still down in there, still providing contrast.
The system degrades gracefully. That's the sign of a good design.
Daniel's recipe is more robust than he probably realizes. The big lettering, the deep groove, the oil-based paint, the metal stencil, each piece is compensating for the weaknesses of the others.
The interlocking stencil is the piece that makes it repeatable. Without that, the whole system is only as consistent as his hand on a given day.
The answer to his question, brass or stainless, is brass for his use case, with the understanding that stainless is the upgrade path, if the volume ever goes up, or the stencils live outside.
The carbide pairing is brass with standard carbide, stainless with diamond cut. Don't mix them.
The cutting room floor detail I found is that HDPE is a poor laser cutting candidate. It melts and puddles instead of vaporizing, leaves a raised, waxy lip, and most shops ban it for fire risk.
The Dremel is actually the right tool for this material, even though it seems like the low-tech option. The laser would make a mess.
The low-tech option is sometimes the right one.
The thing I keep thinking about is that the engraving is doing the weatherproofing, not the paint. That's the insight that changes how you think about this whole workflow.
It's not a marking system. It's a pocket system. The mark just lives in the pocket.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, as always.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.